Great. Thank you, Helen.
Right, we're reading Isaiah 52, starting at verse 13, and it's page 742 in the Church Bibles. Behold, my servant shall act wisely. He shall be high and lifted up and shall be exalted. As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of the children of mankind. So shall he sprinkle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths because of him, for that which has not been told them they see, and that which they have not heard they understand. Who has believed what they heard from us, and whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought peace, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like the sheep that before its shears is silent, so he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered that he cut off the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people. And they made his grave with the wicked, and with a rich man in his death, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief. When his soul makes an offering for sin, he shall see his offspring. He shall prolong his days. The will of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. Out of the anguish of his soul he shall see and be satisfied. By his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore I will divide him a portion with the many, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he poured out his soul to death and was numbered with the transgressors, yet he bore the sin of many and makes intercession for the transgressors.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning. This is a bit new for me. It's a Britney mic. So I have been practicing my moves, so you might get to see them later on if you're good. It's also April the 1st, isn't it? April Fool's Day. You've got just 45 minutes left to pull a prank on someone. April the 1st is also, though, Tim and Tanya's wedding anniversary, so I think we should give them a round of applause. 23 years. Well, do keep that passage in front of you, because it's also Palm Sunday, and we are keeping going in our kind of run into Easter, preparing for celebrating Easter next weekend. So keep that passage in front of you. We'll refer to it as we go. One day, God wrote to the world. Through his prophet Isaiah, he said, in big, bold, Hebrew letters, get ready, get excited, salvation is coming. God is going to come and roll up his sleeves and come rescue his people. God is coming to arm wrestle our enemies to the ground. And when he does, the whole world will see it. They'll say, the Lord has bared his holy arm before the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. The great rescue is on its way. But when it did come, lots of people missed it. The great rescue did not look like a great rescue. It did not look like God was rolling up his sleeves. Verse 1, who has believed what they heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? God's rescue did not arrive like an RAF squadron. God's rescue did not turn up like some kind of action hero. There weren't even any good explosions. Why? Well, it turns out the arm of the Lord is a person. The arm of the Lord is a person. The servant, Isaiah, called him. Jesus, his friends, called him some 700 years later. A person, and not a very attractive one at that. Verse 2, he grew up before him like a young plant, like a root out of dry ground. Not much of a background. He wasn't kind of, you know, the seventh in a long line of pastor's sons. He wasn't educated at the best Bible college around. He wasn't a boy worth watching from a big-named church in a university city. This plant grew up in dry ground, a spiritual wasteland. He didn't look like much of a leader either. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him. If he ran for prime minister, he wouldn't get our vote. He just doesn't look presidential enough. He didn't look like the leader of a popular uprising. He was no Che Guevara. He didn't photograph well either. He was no Blair, no Obama, no Beckham. He had no beauty that we should desire him. And so, Jesus was born to humble parents in a small little backwater of the Roman Empire. Raised in Nazareth, if you like, the Rotherham, the Hull of northern Israel. He started his ministry in Galilee, a grotty little part of a pokey little country. And he gathered a band of fishermen and rejects and outcasts. And all the people who knew, all the people who mattered, all the people with letters after their names, the scribes and the Pharisees, they didn't think that much of him. He didn't look like much of a Messiah. He didn't look like a rescuer. He didn't make Time magazine's 100 list in AD 30. He never launched his own range of beauty products. And so far from being popular, he found himself an outsider. You could say, verse 3, despised and rejected. People didn't like him. People rejected him. He was a sad, serious, intense sort of person. Being associated with him didn't bring anything but problems. He was, verse 3, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, as one from whom men hide their faces. Jesus is coming, look the other way. He was despised and we esteemed him not. And yet there he was, claiming to be the answer. There he was, claiming to be the king of the kingdom. There he was, claiming to be the great rescue. How could that be the case when nobody wanted to invite him to their party, at least not a second time? When nobody wanted to be his friend, when he was a loser? How could that be when God himself didn't seem to think that much of him either? When we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. I mean, surely that was why his life turned out the way it did, right? That was why the Roman soldiers were able to take him off. They were allowed to take him away as a trouble causer. That's why he was nailed to a tree. Shameful, cursed, outside, excluded, God forsaken. Surely God hated him. God was pounding him, punishing him. What was that he shouted out? My God, why have you forsaken me? And as he hung, naked and bleeding and dying and utterly, utterly alone, he did not look like the great rescue. He looked like the big failure. The great rescue came, and like Kevin Costner's Waterworld or Disney's John Carter, nobody saw it. But that was exactly the point. The rejection, the weakness, the dying, the God-forsakenness. That wasn't just kind of the clothing in which the rescue came wrapped. That wasn't kind of the screen behind which the rescue was hiding. That was the rescue. That was the plan all along. It was, verse 10, the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief. See, if he was sad, well, he was sad with our sorrows. If he faced problems and tragedy and grief, it was because he was facing them for us. If God was punishing and pounding him, it was for us. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And that was the great rescue. What sort of rescue you need depends on what sort of danger you're in. Depends on what kind of trouble you're in. We overstep the line. We transgress the boundaries. Step over the good, kind laws of God. And for that, we should be slashed and wounded and cut to pieces and run through with a sword. But he was wounded for our transgressions. We are bent and twisted and always turning away from God. And for that, we deserve to be crushed like annoying bugs under the steel toe-capped boot of God's righteous anger. But he was crushed for our iniquities. We're wayward and rebellious. We're headstrong, independent and stupid. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Not victims, but guilty. But the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. If your house is on fire, you need a fireman. If you're being robbed, you need a policeman. If you're sinful and guilty and standing in the firing line of God's personal displeasure and opposition and fury, you need a stand-in. You need a substitute. You need a sacrifice. You need a sin offering. Someone to go willingly. Someone who can go like a lamb led to the slaughter. Like a sheep before its shearers is silent. Someone who's innocent. Someone who'd done no violence. Someone in whom there was no deceit in his mouth. Someone to be treated the way that I deserve to be treated. Someone to be treated the way that my sins deserve to be treated. Someone to be wounded so that we can be healed. Someone to take the punishment to make peace between us and God. And so too now, people often don't see it. They don't get it. He doesn't look like the great rescue. They look at the man on the cross and they don't see the great rescue. What does Jesus mean to you? I asked to somebody this week and they said, nothing. How often is that because we're looking for something? Yeah, we're looking for something, but not the right thing. We're looking for rescue, a route out, an escape, hope and a future, but we're not sure what from or to. We don't know what sort of trouble we're in. We're looking for the politicians and the policemen to do something. We're looking for the teachers to educate us to a better future. We're looking for the gurus and the experts to fill the holes within. We're looking for Mr. or Mrs. Right to whisk us away from it all. We're looking for money to make us secure. We're looking for surgery to make us beautiful. We're looking for the NHS to save us from dying. It's not that we don't see it because we're not looking. If you don't find Jesus compelling, if Jesus is not vital for you and I, if he isn't your answer, maybe the problem's not with Jesus. Maybe we're not looking for the right thing in the right place. Maybe we don't realize what we should be looking for. We don't need a politician or a policeman or a teacher or a guru or a partner or a pay rise or a facelift or a doctor. That's not in the first place the rescue we need. The problem's so much deeper. We don't need sticking plasters for our sores. We need the infection flushing out of our system. We don't need tarting up. What use is lipstick on a pig? We need to die and rise again as somebody different. We need forgiving and changing. Only one person, only one God has died for your sins. Only one rescuer. You see, not everybody needs to miss it. Not forever. The arm of the Lord was bared, but it was hidden. But hidden forever was never the plan. That was never the plan. How did our passage start? Behold, my servant shall act wisely. He shall be high and lifted up. And so he was. And so he is. He shall be exalted. He was risen again. Once dead, but now prolonging his days. Once counted among the criminals, but now the champion. And for those who do see it now, for those who do get it, for those who do say, yes, I'll take you as my own, well, there's a share in the victory spoils. There's a share in the well done from God the Father. There's a share in the righteousness of the only one who was righteous. Verse 11, by his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous. He shall bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will divide him a portion with the many, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong. When the great rescue came, no one got it. No one realized. But when they do, oh, when they do, it's the salvation of the world. The blood of the Lamb will be sprinkled on many nations. Kings will shut their mouths because they've come to believe the unbelievable, that the carpenter from Nazareth, the crucified man, the big failure on the cross, is the great rescue. And when I say will or will be, I mean already is. When I say when, I really mean now. All nations are already seeing the salvation of the Lord. Many are being accounted righteous. Many, many more will before all is said and done. So the question is, Isaiah's question, God's question to you and I is to whether or not that is you. Verse 1 again. Who has believed what he has heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? What do you see when you see the man on the cross? What do you see when you are suffering, when you see the suffering servant? A nice story for the children. A tragic waste of a young life. A terrible mistake. Horrendous injustice. A big failure. An irrelevant fable. Or the arm of the Lord. The punishment that brought you peace. The answer. The great rescue. Let's take a moment's silence, a couple of minutes' silence, to consider our response to this poem, this part of God's word about Jesus Christ and his death for us. A moment's quiet. And just think about this. What do you see when you see the man on the cross? Let me read some of those words again from Isaiah 53, verse 5 and 6. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Well, they're the words that are taken up and they're used in our final song. So let's stand together and sing.